Welcome back to the Naismith Hockey Podcast. Some technical difficulties as we try to record in the morning, the day after an unforgivable loss. And it's been a while since you and I have connected. We've texted and messaged each other pretty sparingly over the last little while. About the games in particular. I kind of, leading up to the playoffs, and I know, thanks again to Dan Saraceni for stepping in. Make sure if you're not already listening to Islanders Anxiety, you listen to Dan and I, and it must have been really hard for you to listen to the show and want to like butt in and add some thoughts. So if you can think back to the last episode where you weren't on, if you want to just do a little bit of a kind of the week leading up to the Islanders making the playoffs and then the Pittsburgh game. Do you have any thoughts? What were you screaming at your speakers while you were listening?
It's funny because we're going to get into what happened last night. But while I was listening to you guys talk about, you know, how the season ended and going into the first round of the playoffs, I just had this overwhelming sense of dread that, and not because of you guys, everything that you guys said was well put, but everything that I expected to happen that was happening in the regular season was certainly going to happen against the Carolina Hurricanes, and here we are. You know, the thing about the Islanders is, like, you know, we constantly, and we've said it a couple times on this show, we tread lightly with our expectations with them. And, you know, we'll see these really, really good spurts of hockey from them, but that's all they are, is spurts. And then as high as they get on that mountain, they free fall so fast. And I had said to you, and I'm on the record saying this, like, just get in the postseason, wipe the slate clean after that. Right. Well, they wiped it clean and then they just got it dirty once right away again by doing it over and over again. Like they didn't lead in game one against the Hurricanes. They played well, but they couldn't get the win. And then in game two, they play well again, but this was much worse. And I saw a couple of tweets out there, saying that, like, oh, you know, this might have been one of, and if I'm getting ahead of myself, you can tell me.
No, I kind of want you to, you're setting things up. I think this is, as long as we keep it to a broad overview, we're good.
But. Yeah. So I saw a couple of tweets out there saying yesterday's loss against the Hurricanes, which was just game two. There's still more series left, but after that, it doesn't feel much like a series anymore. I saw a lot of tweets saying that might have been the worst loss or top five worst losses in, like, Islanders history. And although it's like the stakes aren't as high as they could be, let's say in a game four, I don't see that as being too unrealistic to say because of how it, I get it. They're going back home to UBS. Maybe that'll be a little bit better for them, but you were 2 minutes away from tying the series and going home versus what the reality is, which is going home down 2-0 against one of the best teams in the Eastern Conference. You had a real opportunity here and you messed it all up. I think I know, I've come to the conclusion what it is. We could talk about that later, but I want to let that marinate in your mind for a minute. And then what do you think?
I think there are a lot of games that stick with you. Recently, the Islanders have had a few good ones, and we've been really lucky to have those. The Pulock save, the Anthony Beauvillier overtime winner, the Bailey overtime winner against Pittsburgh, you know, the game one to the Island. We've had a lot of good memories, I think, over the last maybe handful of years or so. By and large, I think for our vintage of Islander fan, it's a lot of letdowns. It's there's a reason why Dan Sarcini's handle is culture of losing. Like, that's not a joke. That is very much.
It is a joke, but it's also not a joke.
I mean, there's truth in jest, and that is certainly one of those moments where it's absolutely there's a lot of truth in jest, and there's just something about this team and the franchise that just attracts these kind of moments. It's as if, you know, in 93, they make it to the conference final. They dethrone the Pittsburgh Penguins. They beat the Washington Capitals, if I'm remembering all of that correctly. Ray Ferraro having the as in his words, the best week of his life, you know, in his career. You know, and they lose to the eventual Stanley Cup champion, you know, led by Patrick Waugh, coincidentally, the Montreal Canadiens, who go on to win the Stanley Cup. The following year, they are swept by the Rangers, again, who then go on to win the Stanley Cup. The Rangers underscore, you know, footnote that that's half the Oilers team. But, yeah, I mean, after that, it's this culture that they just can't get over these humps, and there's just this thing. And then even against the Lightning, and I don't think anything we're seeing now is necessarily less of what we saw then, where there's just something missing, and we'll definitely get there later. I think to bring it to more recent memory, which isn't really that recent anymore, it's almost a decade ago next spring, this game in particular, outside of them leading, this felt like how they showed up against the Capitals in 2015. Where that was a game seven. I understand that that's a little bit different, but I think there was all this hype there. I was at game six, you know, at the Coliseum, the first last game at the Coliseum. And man, they really had the jam that night, and they really figured it out, or that afternoon or whatever it was. Game seven, it was incredible. It's incredible. And I remember watching. I was amped up, dude. I love like getting the hero and my favorite drinks and all this. I remember just having a spread. I was so excited. Like, they could really do this. They could really just make this happen. And they didn't even show up. I don't even remember if I finished the game. I think they lost like 5-1. It was embarrassing. And that's kind of where I get stuck. And it immediately reverted to that, where you just saw a team. After 25 minutes or so, they didn't show up. They just didn't exist. And I do want to go over game one, because I think that even amplifies what we saw in game two. And so let's backtrack for a second. What were your feelings after game one? What was your, you know, I have my own thoughts, but like, what were your feelings? So you know, they go on 7-0-1 going into the playoffs. They play game one against, you know, arguably a better team. I don't think that's a stretch. I don't think any Islander fans disagree, yeah. At least on paper. What were your thoughts following game one?
It simply put, I thought Varlamov obviously played really well. I thought that the Islanders played an Islander game, like a good Islander game.
It was Barry Trotz game, if I've ever seen one.
Yes.
Not a lot of shots. Oh, well, actually, no, they started a lot of the shots. The second half of the game, they got out.
Yeah, and that's typically how it goes, right? A lot of offense toward the beginning, and then they, you know, kind of get more on the defensive end, and you know, the shots tend to be toward the beginning of the first half of the game, and then, you know, they try to lock it down. And they were buoyed by really good goaltending. They don't end up winning, but after that game, I sit there and I say to myself, okay, they made a statement in this game, going into their building and almost stealing a win. You know, I could see them taking game two, and man, it looked like that was gonna happen.
Yeah. The game one was great. It was a game that they really a game of inches. It was a feel good loss. And we have not had many of those this season. They have been terrible feeling most of the time. I thought they went out there, game of inches, hit post, Palmieri, Dobson. They had these moments where it was just, you know, Anderson just standing on his head, or they had their moments where they really could have stolen that one. And it gave me a lot of confidence. I was definitely wary going into the playoffs. I was definitely more optimistic than I thought. And again, like you said, clean slate, kind of going in there and just hoping for the best. Like last year, they lost to the Hurricanes. 4-2 looks worse than it was. Two overtime games, a lot of bad calls. We're going to get to all that too. But it left me with some confidence going into game two. And then the way they start, and I'll pass it back, the way that they start, you say, okay, wow, they can really do this. They are getting slightly at work and they're taking advantage of specific opportunities and scoring, but they're at least scoring and then holding it, if only for a period or so.
It's funny because I was talking to my dad. He was texting me throughout this game. And he texted me at the end of the second period. And he was like, I don't know how we escaped. Because you could see the pressure starting to build. And I said, yeah, they really got to lock it down here. You know, this is where they tend to either make or break themselves in the third period. And that could be true for the Hurricanes too, right? They always kind of, until they got Gensel and they got Kuznetsov, had some and Kuznetsov started well, but he fell off. Regardless, he was a factor. And they always kind of, you know, start slow and end well. And the Islanders are the opposite. You know, I said to him, they got to lock down this third period. It's a huge momentum swing here, not just for the game, but for the series. And, you know, he goes one shot in the last 16 minutes, you know, and that's in the third period.
And that went all the way up to 33 minutes.
And as soon as he texted me that, it was 3-2, or it was, the Hurricanes made it 3-2. A couple minutes later, tie game. And my dad, he texted me again. I was waiting for this. And then 9 seconds later, he's texted me in all capital letters. Oh my God, GTFO, you know, cursing emoji faces. And I'm like, same old song and dance, man. This is just really, really bad. And I said to him, you know, part of me, I don't want to sit here and say, oh, the skill's not there. I don't want to sit here and say the determination's not there. I don't think that's it at this point. I think it's, I don't know if this team is conditioned well enough. I really think that conditioning might be one of the biggest factors here because, you know, the Islanders used to be able to go out there and throw their body around. Like, look at that hit by Kotkaniemi on Clutterbuck where he lost his bucket a couple of years ago, right? Look, Clutterbuck shot right back up and he was fine. But that wears on you throughout the game goes on. A couple of years ago, when he was a little younger and a little more durable, it wasn't wearing on him throughout the game as quickly, at least, you know, maybe that was a next day kind of thing. Now, I don't know, you know, maybe it's a combination of not being conditioned well enough. And quite frankly, one of the older teams in the league. And I know that narrative is old and played out and that's true. I agree with that. But in this specific case, of what went wrong here, I think it's conditioning combined with age and them being not able to, some of the older guys, the depth guys, right? Because you need depth in the playoffs, right? It can't all be on Barzal. It can't all be on Bo Horvat, right? I think at some point, they just can't keep up with the four lines that the Hurricanes are rolling out there. And that's what I was watching. Because when Barzal and Horvat are on the ice, that line, they're playing pretty well. It's after those guys come off the ice that things start to slow down for the Islanders. And so that's where I sit here and I say, I wonder if there's a conditioning issue here.
I don't know. It seems like it's just a lack of focus. I come back to that, how it's they get into the second period outside of Lee's great goal And I give him a lot of credit in this series for being himself. He's very much come back into his own finally, and being the captain, at least, you know, game one, he was great. A lot of really good efforts in the corners, you know, real bull in a china shop kind of attitude. And in game two, in early in the second period, he scores that really great goal. But I don't know that it seems like it's an effort and a focus thing. I don't know that it's conditioning. I don't know if it's their age necessarily. Because you think at a certain point, especially that looking back at the teams that win the cup, they always kind of, they're towards 30. They're in and around that 29 to 31 kind of age group. It's very, and I think I spoke about this because, again, as you said, it's a little bit of a narrative around this team. But they can go up 3-0, though. I think that's where, like, you see that effort in game one, and they didn't look like that. And then in game two, they didn't travel. I don't even think they had a full day off. They did a morning skate, 30 minutes, whatever that is, 30, 40 minutes. I don't know. I wonder if this, we talked about this. Dan uses the word rotten. We've used that word. After he said it, I couldn't get it out of my head. But is it like other, because even in the third, even in the last year of Barry Trotz, things started to get off the rails. And I really don't want to hear any of the excuses about the travel. And it was your professionals figured out. No one else in the whole world gets to say that. There's no, like, if you're just bad, just say that. I understand it was like mercenaries at a certain point. And it was like the Bridgeport Islanders, and fine. That's a very small piece of the season. As we've seen this year, you can come back from bad stretches. You've seen that with a lot of good teams will eventually figure it out. So even in that last year of Trotz, I really think it's the group at this point. And I don't want to use the word uncoachable or something like that, but I think it's the group. This is the third coach. Lambert just wasn't a good coach. Fine. Barry Trotz, though, after what he was able to get out of them, and now Patrick Waugh, who for moments and spurts is really able to get a lot out of this team. And again, the way they play in game one, the way they started game two, 3-0, at least lock it down. Like, I almost don't care that they got 12 shots in this game. I think of the worst. The footnote to all that is Palmieri had 4 and Horvat had 3. So the rest of the team had 5. Thanks to Joe Pantano for that. Really drove it home for me how tough this game was. But there's a part of, let's ignore that for a second. You have 3-0 for a good chunk of that game. More than half, about half. Up 3-0. Then it's 3-1. Okay. It's a lot of penalties. It's a lot. Varlamov, useless little, which I'm sure was funny for a second. Maybe Billy Smith was laughing somewhere. The slash on the back of whoever's legs. You just don't do that shit. Like, that's the stuff that wears on you. Talking about some of the older guys. Those are your penalty killers. Horvat can only do so much. Cizikas is out there. Clutterbuck's out there. Nelson kills penalties here and there. I didn't really see a whole lot of Holmstrom on the PK. Maybe I just didn't see it, but... Pageau is on the penalty kill. That's why your bottom six can't do more. McLean was their best forward for 2 games. Is that that's where you're going to ride? I understand other players had goals, but you know, Horvat might be the exception. Nelson's been a ghost. Dobson doesn't look great. He might be really injured. Barzell, I think he's trying to do too much. I said this before. He has a little bit of the Tavares syndrome where he's just trying to take over and he just can't. He's not quite at that level. And there are moments where Tavares could, and there are moments where Barzell can. Not against this team. They're too good. The defense is, their sticks are too long. They're too big. You don't have the room. And they're aggressive. Carolina's aggressive 5-on-5, and they're aggressive, especially in the penalty kill. So the Islanders' power play can't really even get going. I think they were 1-for-3 in this game on the power play. That was the lead goal early in the second period. but it's, you just see them able to do it. So I'm not trying to discredit what you're saying. I'm just like, that might be part of it, but I think they're worn down because of the penalty kill. All those guys that you mentioned are on the PK, that bottom six, save for Nelson and Horvat. But even still, what do you expect out of those guys when you're in the box for all, you know?
Yeah.
And you're just, it's not even, again, it's not a breakaway where you tripped them. It's not a 2-on-1. It's not like an understandable defensive zone penalty. A lot of it is not great. A lot of it's just dumb penalties.
One of the biggest problems too is, you know, Peugeot and Lee both dash threes yesterday. And that's, you know, you expect that of Lee because he is what he is at this point. But
he's good in the offensive zone. It's just him and like right. And a bunch of guys. They literally can't get the puck out of the zone.
That's the problem.
I was watching the game, and even Butch at a certain point, who I know some teams, it's hard to watch other teams' feeds when one of the dudes is a homer or whatever, but I love Butch because he tells it like it is. When they're good, he'll say it, but when they're bad, yeah, they keep trying to go up the boards. It's Pellick, it's Lee, it's a couple of players.
Right.
There it is again. It's just getting, I think it was the second goal or the third goal. He was like, I don't even know what happened. Engvall's on the boards. You see the puck there, and it just doesn't get out.
And that's the problem, right? And he's part of that line with Lee and Peugeot that really didn't play well defensively, which is, you know, an issue because Peugeot's supposed to be one of your, if not your best defensive forward. Now, granted, yes, he's nicked up and, you know, he didn't play in the first game, so maybe that has something to do with it, but it's extremely discouraging to watch this team, you know, do this again in such a crucial moment. It's tough. So one of the things that I was sitting there and I was watching, though, at, you know, near the end of the game, look, you saw how frustrated the Islanders were, and I was sitting there and I'm like, what are they getting so mad at with the Hurricanes for, you know, I forget who it was. I think it was, Gensel, you know, puts the puck in the empty net. Right away, Brock Nelson's giving him the business, you know, putting cross-checking him in the back. And Gensel's not even trying to acknowledge him. He keeps going at him, and more guys step in. And then it gets really chippy. Like that last 2.5 minutes took a really long time to end.
Oh, it was so painful. The fact that it took, it was like hours between Islanders leading and the end of that game.
Yes. So, and I'm sitting there, I'm like, what are they doing? Like they look like children right now. And then it marinated for me. And I said, oh, I know what they're doing. They're going back home. They're going to be playing in front of their own crowd. They're trying to get under their skin because they want to play. They want to bring the Hurricanes down to their level.
They're too good.
They are too good, but they want to try and bring them down to their level and play this physical game that they believe that they can win. And maybe they can win that physical game, wear down the Hurricanes and make their lives living hell, frankly, for the rest of this series. I don't know if it's the, you know, we might not beat you, but we're going to beat you up mentality, or if it's we're going to beat you up so we can beat you sort of thing. Maybe it's a little bit of both. But that's what I felt like the end of that game was, you know, like Cizik is getting all fired up for taking a regular ass check. I was just like, Jesus Christ. Like the, I get being frustrated with yourselves, but it's not, you know, it's not anything they did. This is all self-inflicted. But once all that dust settled and I really thought about it, I was like, you know what? These guys are trying to bring the Hurricanes down to their level and they're going to try and really nail them the rest of this series with the body and wear them down to try and collect wins, because thus far, I mean, it's been physical, but it wasn't like that. So I think that's what the goal was there at the end of the game.
That's entirely possible. I it's funny. I thought about it very differently. And I even tweeted from our account earlier today, you know, there's a Ethan Sears, who had a couple of great one-liners, and I have one that I'll get to in a second. he had an Anders Lee quote that said, that one fucking hurts. And it's as if they had, including him, had no outcome, had no effect on the outcome of the game. Who are you mad at? I know you're taking it out on the Hurricanes. And maybe your what you're saying is partially true, or maybe it's all true. But the way that I saw it was, it's a team that doesn't even know who they're mad at. They didn't do anything to you. You were leading that game. Like, yeah. Why do you act as if the world is happening to you?
That was what I was thinking.
How do you even say that as if you didn't have any influence on the outcome of that game? There's nothing you could have done. You all played a shift in the last 10 minutes or the whole game. They got outchanced. Like, I have the note somewhere. We're all over the place. I don't even think I could find it. Like 110, there it is, 110 to 28. And then one shot in 33 minutes. They were hemmed in their own zone for 1 or 2 minutes at a time. Again, couldn't get the puck out. That fourth line, I don't know how they held the line there. I have no idea. But the lack of focus thing, I think it was the tying goal, right? I forget who was in the back door, Aho, something. He was just like all alone. Pelech just leaves him alone and goes and gets a stick instead of just getting a body on and you know, putting his knee down or pushing him out of the way or just like causing havoc. No, he leaves him wide open at the side of the net for that goal. There's plenty to be annoyed about the Canes and their fans, and I definitely want to get to all that at the end, and Rob Brind'Amour and all that. I understand you want to get chippy, you're lost, it sucks. But yeah, I don't know how you like how entitled, you know. People joke that, you know, it's a country club and all this kind of stuff, but that to me, like the attitude that they have after these games, and this is how it's been all season, which is why like the slate has not cleared. That was our mistake. This was the same team. I think that was just to help us get there. And again, in game one, they tricked us. The rug was pulled out from under us in game two. I don't know. They just make it seem like, again, the world is happening to them. That game, the loss happened to them. There's no way they could have won. That was just how it was written. Or, I don't know. It's so confusing and disappointing. And I think I normally don't watch until the end in those situations, but I kind of just had it on the background. I was cleaning up and just, you know, getting ready for bed, and somehow I was going to fall asleep with all the anger. And I think even Shannon said something to Thomas Hickey, like there's no way to sugarcoat it or something like that. And I think even like a step further, again, Ethan Sears had a great line. Pretty hard to avoid the conclusion that this game was an ass kicking disguised as a comeback. There is nothing that describes that game better than that. They were never in that game. They were up 3-0. I didn't get excited for a second. I just sat there. My girlfriend's looking at me. Isn't this good? Like, they're up 3-0. You should be a little excited. Like, haven't you heard me from the other room all season? This is the second period. Like, it's just going to fall apart. Or,
like, no. There's well over 30 minutes left in this game. It's.
Yeah. And then you just saw their souls leave their body. Like, I don't understand what happens. And we will never know. And that's what I'm saying. It's like, all right, now it's three different coaches. You really can't. And it's mostly the same group. And I've been on record saying, actually, I think it's a lot less of the same group than we think. But if enough of that core is there, they're the culture. And if there's something wrong with the roster, which obviously there is, right? They could have won game two. Hell, they could be up 2-0 in the series. And you go, they really need another defenseman and they really need another forward. And it's just really not there. They don't really even have a mercenary. Like, they can't even just call somebody up that can be a game breaker. Sorokin may be that player, and none of this is on Varlamov. Sorokin may be able to turn the tide. The crowd may be able to turn the tide. I don't know. I think this is deeper. I don't know how any, you know, this is definitely a, you know, we believe in this group banner joke moment where you could just sit there and hear what everyone's saying before they even say it. Patrick Waugh to a degree, I kind of want him to have that fire. I don't know that it's any good to us, like in the media. It's probably good that he doesn't. I really hope he's laying into them, though. This isn't working.
I 100% agree with you. After the game, I said Patrick Waugh should be in the locker room throwing chairs, throwing something. Go full Herb Brooks here, chuck a puck at the you know, the dry erase board or something like that. Like, this, something yeah. needs to happen.
Well, something, like you said, weeks ago, how are they doing this in front of Patrick Waugh? Are you embarrassed?
Exactly.
I wouldn't be able to face him. I would have my jersey over my head.
I agree.
I don't know. Again, Patrick Waugh cannot, unfortunately, go out there and play. Right. And I think he's more cerebral and X's and O's than like a Wayne Gretzky. Right. And he was a goalie. Right. So it's he sees the game differently. He understands differently, but he's like an actual coach. Whereas Gretzky, he was dealing with the artist formerly known as the Phoenix Coyotes. And they weren't good at that point, but he also wasn't getting the best out of anything there. And you know what? He had a good enough playing career where he doesn't need to do that. Patrick Waugh, on the other hand, has seen success as a coach. He, with the Avalanche to a degree, a lot in juniors. We were able to see these changes that he's making, you know, maybe not as fast as we really wanted. And it works for six games and they lose eight games and they win seven or eight games. And then they really botch it and they come out really strong in the playoffs and then they, you know, fill their diaper. So I don't know how they can face him. I would have chartered my own plane home, rented a car. I don't know that I would have been able to be on the plane with him. That's so embarrassing. I don't even know if I'm him, what you can even say. I don't think that you want to be the, well, in my day or any of that stuff. Like, I don't know that that would necessarily work, but I don't know, like, from his experience, how they all know his career. They all saw those teams, even if it was right. Clipped later. You saw the intensity. You saw what it takes. They mostly know what it takes. They've done it before. And that's, I think, maybe that's the most disappointing thing. Last year, you're like, okay, that's roster improvement. They really were in it. It goes six games. It's a couple of this. It's the refs are annoying. It's this thing. It's that thing. This year is not exactly that. This team was on paper better. It's still really early on in the series.
It is, but you're right. And there's something to be said about a team who, and look, I'm in a locker room every other day. So I saw this sort of thing happen this season in New Jersey where we would go in asking the same questions and they wouldn't have an answer. Why is this happening all the time? Right? For example, the Devils gave up the first goal of the game 57 times out of 82 this year. That's absurd. And, you know, again, we would say, like, what's the problem here? How do you fix this? Genuinely, they did not know. Is that a leadership thing? I don't think so. I think it's a roster construction thing. And the very same thing could be said about the Islanders. Is like, you know.
But at core, I remember what I was going to say. They've been there before.
Right.
Why are they acting like they haven't been here before?
Well, and that's why I'm saying
it could be, you know, it's
it
over.
Could be roster like, construction, and that goes back to, you know, what Dan Saraceni said about something rotten, and what you said about something being rotten, and like it makes sense. You know how again, you know, to your very well stated point, swatting a fly that's apparently in my room. You know, how do you sit there and play in front of one of the most intense players of all time, right? Yes, in the net, but doesn't matter. That actually makes the case even better. You know, that he played goalie, and he's still known as one of the most aggressive players of all time. How do you not go out there and match that level? Because you could also see him getting to that level behind the bench. And sometimes, you know, like last night after the game, they lost. You saw him stay reserved. And, you know, in the post-game presser, he stayed reserved. I have a hard time believing he walks into that locker room and it's just like, yep, sucked. No, I think he's going in there fired up. So how are you not in turn responding to that? It's very, very interesting to digest, but it's almost like you can't digest it. You end up throwing up because there's no answer. How do you not? I want to throw up. You're playing in front of Patrick Waugh. Match the intensity. And
yeah, that's a good addition to what I was thinking, but just couldn't put together. It's disappointing. It's unforgivable, and we've had those moments throughout the season. You know, the Stadium Series game comes to mind in front of however many millions of people, and but it's not surprising. I think that's maybe the worst part, is that you could have seen this coming before the series. Oh yeah, they're gonna have their moments. They're absolutely gonna have their moments. They did last year against this team. But I think I had hope, and maybe that's where I really left it going into it. But I don't know. It's completely gone, and there's a really good chance that I don't even watch on Saturday. There's nothing to watch. Thursday can tell us everything we need to know.
We know hockey games move fast, but with DraftKings Sportsbook, an official sports betting partner of the NHL, you can score faster than anything happening on the ice. This week, new customers can bet $5 and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Take the action on any of the NHL's upcoming games, including Lightning Panthers, Rangers Islanders, or Avalanche Oilers. Download the DraftKings Sportsbook app with code THPN. New customers bet just $5 on the NHL and get $200 instantly in bonus bets. Only on DraftKings Sportsbook with code THPN. The crown is yours. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER or visit www.1800gambler.net. In New York, call 877-8-HOPE-NY or text HOPE-NY-467-369. In Connecticut, help is available for gambling. Call 888-789-7777 or visit ccpg.org. Please play responsibly. On behalf of Boot Hill Casino and Resort, 21 plus, age varies by jurisdiction, void in Ontario. Bonus bets expire 186 hours after issuance. See dkng.com/hockey for eligibility and deposit restrictions, terms, and responsible gaming resources. NHL and the NHL Shield are registered trademarks of the National Hockey League.
Moving on from these games, looking forward a little bit. I kind of touched on as a team, is it a coaching thing? Is it a roster thing? It's certainly not the coach, at least not what we think. I don't want to look past the series though, and I think that's our reaction, right? You're just like, oh, okay, well, this is done. What can they do in the off season? And I don't even, frankly, I can't wait to have a break. I think we might come back in like July, well after the trade deadline. We've typically been really good about not being off for more than like 2 or 3 weeks. We can't do this. like this we can't immediately, like, again, we're in this series and like, oh yeah, well, they can just get a player. You know what, it's not really worth it. It's almost not worth having a show. Even if they sign someone, I want to see it all at training camp. Like, it's none of it is I've never just wanted. I had my last beer league game the other day. I did text you about that because I like almost broke my thumb. I've never just wanted to be away from hockey this much before. I had a great season, really fun and all that stuff. But, like, as far as the Islanders and paint, like, I think I'll, you know, watch the cup, and I always, you know, pay attention to stuff, but I don't want to have any stake in it. I don't want to feel I don't want to feel anything towards it. I just want to watch to enjoy it. This has been one of the more unenjoyable seasons. And if the last few minutes of that game against the Canes isn't just the epitome of all that, I don't know what it is. It makes it really hard to look forward and be excited about this team.
And yeah.
Game three, I mean, or whatever.
That's just the way the cycle goes, right? The cycle is it's over after a loss, right back to we're so back if they win. You know, it's again, you're like,
well, I don't think that they would need a win so convincing.
Right.
And even then, the immediate question is, can they do it three more times? The answer is no. Just to get that out of the way. Prove me wrong. Fine. I live and die by this. I have for my entire life. I'm not going to not be excited. This isn't like I can't wait for you to tell me how I was wrong. But yeah, Anders Lee, the rest of this team, who are all so annoyed at something, not themselves, apparently confused as how they got here. God, it's like they didn't watch the season. I don't know how you just, I understand there's like a 24-hour rule or a midnight rule or whatever Watt says, where be excited or mad until midnight and then you got to move on. But there's something like, how do you just, when something goes wrong that many times and it's the same type of shit over and over and over, I don't know how you don't stop and check and then figure something out and move on. Like, I don't quite understand how you seemingly ignore that, and not in a healthy way where you're actually paying attention for a second and then you're gonna, okay, what did we do wrong, and then move on. They're just like not even doing that as a group. There's something missing from the conversation. I don't know that they'd be back. Do you think that they can win? They win Thursday. Did they win three? Not even three in a row. They just have to win three games.
No. I don't have confidence that they'll win this series at all. Like,
no, there's no reason. They've given us no reason.
It's like 99-1 in favor of the Hurricanes.
That might be generous. Giving the Islanders a full one feels generous. And what sucks, again, to circle back, we've seen that they can play well in this series. It's not impossible for them to do that. Right. It's just, even within the game, all I could think, and it was the most cliche, just basic hockey instinct maybe. And I'm like, oh man, just win every shift. That's all you have to do, right? If I'm the coach, you're up 3-0. All right, we really got to buckle down here. They're going to come out. They're going to be hungry. We're embarrassing them in their own building. Win every shift. That's it. Don't worry about two shifts from now. Don't worry about how much time's left. When your number is called, go out there and win the shift. They're going to score a goal. They might even score two goals. You have to break the game down in those chunks. And whether they said that or not, I guess, I don't know what the mindset is. It doesn't even look like there is one. It's just brain dead hockey. I'm at a bit of a loss. I was a little concerned we could have just done a podcast of us sighing for 35 minutes and been like, all right, well, we'll see you next week. And when on the other side, like, who even knows? But yeah, it's frustrating. I think what makes it worse is, and this is be the last little part of the show here, the Carolina Hurricanes Twitter account, Rob Brindamore, the fans in the building who are as if they're watching their first game, just incredulous about everything. Someone, was it Gensel's stick gets caught in Varlamov's mask? The whistle blows, they boo. What do you want to have happen?
Oh, dude.
Dude, all this little stuff though, like the linesmen were just taking their time dropping the puck and everyone was getting thrown out. And it was a lot of Hurricanes, like a bunch in a row. An Islander player gets thrown out and they cheer. Dude.
I can't sit here and pretend like the same exact thing is not happening in UBS Arena. It is.
Well, now it's gonna, but that's not.
It would have before, dude. We.
I don't know. Not like that. They're crybabies. We saw
fans throw beer cans on the ice.
All right. I'm not saying we're completely
immune. Where smells like cigarettes and beer at Nassau Coliseum level. Insane. This shit is happening on Long Island in a reverse situation. Guaranteed. Islander fans are up there with the rabidest, is that most rabid fans in the NHL. They're a small, loyal bunch who are rabid. I am 100% convinced. You don't have to like it as an Islander fan on the other side of it. I understand that, but you need to also have that capacity to know that in a reverse situation, guaranteed, Islander fans are doing the same thing. It's just true.
First of all, I feel attacked. Second of all, on my own podcast, I think it's different because the fans learned from Brindamore and the players. Every time someone's looked at weird, they're up in arms. They're complaining to the refs. They're looking around. Someone in front of the net, like, I think Pelech just deflected the puck away. Didn't even touch this player. They just turned around like, where's the call? And I think fans see that. And yeah. Then they see Brindamore, Rob Brindamore, do all the same things. And there's not a second where he doesn't look like he's about to burst into tears on the bench. Like, there's emotional.
I'll agree
and
with you on that. I will agree with you on that. But the thing is, they also, like, they lean into that. Look at it. And I'll admit, in game one, how many dives did that team get away with?
But that's the thing. So they make it. Who said this? Someone said it's like, it's just they made it a hostile environment to go play there for refs, for the opposing team. Like, you're playing two teams when you go to them. They just made that the environment going into PNC. And
that's the way they like it.
And the fans just bought in. It's as if they like send a text and it's part of a larger strategy. Because it makes it so distracting every time you do something. It's like the Islanders score a goal and they're like, where's the call? No, it's just a goal. There's nothing else happens here. It's just a goal against. Relax. It's like, turns out, part of the game. That might be a surprise to you. But it's just the way it goes. So it made it really hard to watch. And then seeing, Islander fans amplifying the Carolina Twitter account doesn't help. You're just doing what they're hoping that you do with it. And I guess it's a sports team. They can do whatever they want on social media. Fine. But it just seems like a lot. I think they just said cry. Like, that was the tweet in capital letters. I said cry. And I'm like, now there's a rivalry. This is the third time, the third series against Carolina. It's a lot of times the Islanders simply not winning. This is going to be their hump that they need to get over. This is going to be their demon that they need to overcome. Just like the Penguins and the Capitals, or the Leafs and the Bruins, or any one of these things. The Avalanche and the Blues and all this, they're going to need to overcome the Hurricanes. If they're going to be third in the division, this is lining up for the Islanders to be exactly in the same place as the Leafs are, where every single year or more times than not, they're just playing the Bruins in the first round. That is just simply what happens. And, or the Lightning or whatever. I don't remember being like this against the Lightning, though. 2 years in a row, it wasn't like this. This is a different level. The Hurricanes, right, their fans, the coaches are surgical. They are rent-free. They is as if they bought Nassau Coliseum and turned it into, I don't even know, something. Like, they're owning the Islanders up and down. Like Ethan said, an ass-kicking disguised as a comeback. They were never in that game. And then it's just the environment, the only thing that can change. And the problem is they only have three games at home if they even pushed it all the way to game six. They don't really have the option to use home ice to propel them. They can only get so far. It's disappointing. Underscore. Understatement of the century, but
yeah, one thing we didn't get to talk about before, you know, the playoffs, and actually one before I get there, actually one player I do want to highlight. I know the Islanders are not playing all that well, but one guy who is playing well, who I'm really enjoying to watch, is Kyle McLean.
I said that before. He's the best player.
He's the best player on the team right now. And I don't mean skill-wise. I just mean, like, you know, every shift gives it his all, and he's very effective on every single one. So he deserves his flowers for sure. I hope he sticks around. He's like the new Cizikas.
Makes Peugeot extra, again, not to get too far ahead, but that's all I could think. Like, you have to find some like sliver of hope here. Yeah, it makes Peugeot super expendable.
Yeah, I agree with that. And the other guy I want to talk about, who I think proved, you know, look, very short sample. Ruslan Iskakov got a couple games under his belt. And
just the one. Just a game against the Penguins.
Was it one? I thought it might have been two. Okay.
Well, it was extra funny because it was his first NHL game, and then it was Carter's last. And I just thought weird juxtaposition there between the two of them.
I thought that he played well. I know he's just one game, very short sample size. You know, you got to see it over a larger sample. But, you know, the narrative that, oh, these guys are too small, can't play, yada, yada. I think Iskakov, despite his size, you know, he's a good little depth guy to have. So I think that, you know, look, back-to-back all-star, there was like a report he was considering going back to Russia and playing there. I don't think that was confirmed. It might have just been, you know, hearsay from like his agent trying to get, you know, contract firm or something like that. But I think they might have a little something in Iskakov. Look, a couple
he's
of things.
He's just really small and got pushed around. So I don't know how you solve that necessarily.
You figure it out. Zuccarello did, right? Like, these guys do it. So, you know, a couple tweaks here and there, you know, that this is a conversation for another pod, but a couple tweaks here and there. And, you know, the bones are good. The bones for this team are good. They just need a shake up here, like a major one. Someone major coming in, potentially someone major going out. Just a little bit of new blood. And, you know, you might see something completely different next season. But that's getting ahead of ourselves. I know it was a podcast of dread, but it's not over till the lady sings, and she hasn't sung yet.
Yeah, I don't. I'm struggling to have some closing thoughts. I think we've kind of gone over everything at this point. I can't get that Caps game out of my head. It feels a lot like that. And then we have to, it's as if there were more games after that, and we just have to watch at least two more. Yep. So it makes it really, really hard to want to kind of stick by them. Because, like you said, it's all self-inflicted, so I don't really feel bad. I feel stupid and duped. And again, this entire season, you know, I think you can go back and forth. Is it worth making the playoffs? And it's good for the team and the dollars and cents of it all. And fine. But they're getting embarrassed. I don't know that they're learning anything that they didn't already know. It's just we're seeing the entire roller coaster of the season so far in two games. We've seen as far as high as they can go. They take momentum, they go up, and then they crash. That was the last month of the season in two games. They really deserved some. They got they don't really get the breaks, and then they break themselves.
Right.
That's the whole season in two games. Again, they could come out and win game three. And then that's the next bounce. Like, they bounce back and they go on a streak. And that's three periods in a row of good hockey. That's what that means. That's their streak. They want a bunch of shifts in a row. And then they're going to crash. And then it's going to be four bad periods in a row, six bad periods in a row. And then that's the series. It's not as... Even with a better team on paper, a better coach, they're not playing as good as they did last year. And I didn't think they were very good. I've heard some takes about last year that am I not remembering this correctly? I don't remember enjoying watching that. I remember they had like a game, maybe a game and a half, maybe two games, like not even the ones they won, but two games in total, like six periods of good hockey. I don't remember that being a good series. Like, some bad goals and some short sight, like the Stastny thing and overtime. And yeah, like they got to overtime. And like I said earlier, maybe it wasn't even fully 4-2. Like, as like they didn't lose. They didn't go 2-4 in that series. It was like 2-2-2 overtime losses. And it really was close and a bounce and this and that. But yeah, it's definitely not that this year. It's game one, maybe, but after that big of a letdown, I'm not entirely sure. I don't know how you come back from that. It's one of those just kind of burn the tape of the season. Do what you got to do. Go out there and play hard, and maybe you steal one. It's just not worth it. We can't. As fans, we can't do this, and it doesn't seem like they have any interest in moving forward either.
We'll see what happens.
Any closing thoughts here?
Just fucking. I don't know, man. Just play a full 60 minutes. God damn it.
Yeah, I think that's exactly where my head is at as well. Just have to do something. Do more. I don't know. Yeah, go give a full effort. That's probably the answer here. You know where to find us. I'm at John Zella. You can find on Twitter. You can find James at James Nichols NHL. Devil season's over. He's still pumping out some content. Definitely find him at New Jersey Hockey Now. I've been tweeting during the games from my account, from the NHP account. Follow us. Pay attention. Yell at me when I'm wrong. But I don't know. James, what do you? How do we end this episode? Do you go back to a classic and see what happens? Do you try something else?
No.
But
classic don't usually change things, I have to say. Something new.
All right. Well, bring us home.
Until next time, figure it the fuck out.